Good afternoon, and welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman, and I'm here live with you Tuesdays at 2 p.m. talking to you about healthcare and exercise trends. Today's show is about the potential hazards of cell phones and exposure to electromagnetic fields. My guest is Cindy Sage, an environmental consultant. I'll open up the phone lines as usual for your participation at around 2:40, and the phone number when I do open the lines will be 510-848-4425. And please wait for me to open the lines before calling in. For more information, including how to order a tape, you can call my information number. That's 707-773-4727, and you can call that 24 hours. Or you can go to the website, delete www, and type in members.aol.com/YOHAF, YOHAF, YOHAF, the initials of the show. Briefly, it would seem that as we've tamed our environment, we've seen the rise of new dangers from this new environment. We're not being chased by tigers anymore, but now there are some other things that are going on in our new environment. How well we'll adapt to our changing environment is the subject of today's show as we look at the current scientific research concerning radio frequency radiation from cellular phones, and electromagnetic fields from our many appliances and power sources. Today we'll discuss research about how these exposures accumulate and what kind of changes they may set off in our DNA, neurological systems, brain chemistry, and whether prudent use or prudent avoidance is advisable. You will be the judge. My guest is Cindy Sage, and I'm about to introduce her. Do we have you on the line, Cindy?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be with you.
Cindy Sage is the owner of Sage Associates, an environmental consulting firm in Montecito, California, Central California. Southern Central California. They provide land use suitability analysis to private clients and public agencies regarding geologic, soils, agricultural, biologic, and environmental policy constraints. She's been involved in EMF, electromagnetic field issues, as an environmental consultant in public policy research since 1982. Ms. Sage has had her papers published in a broad variety of professional journals and has presented to many public policy and health forums across the U.S. and in Canada. So we're very lucky to have her here. I should mention that I heard Cindy on a show on NPR and was concerned because I didn't feel that she got a word in edgewise. I was rather concerned. It sounded like she had something to say, so I called her. So welcome to you. I should probably have you start by explaining some of the terminology we'll be using today and also by distinguishing the different types of exposure sources, because it's a little confusing. You know, there's terms like radio frequency and microwaves and extremely high and extremely low. So why don't you go over some of the terminology and what exactly we're talking about?
Well, we'll try and make it simple today.
That'd be nice.
And when we talk about the exposure that comes from wireless communication, and that means your cordless phone at home, your cellular phone, and that kind of thing, you're talking about radio frequency radiation. Microwave radiation is a subset or a part of that. And microwave radiation is also familiar to many people because it's what helps to cook your food in your microwave oven, although at much higher levels of power. And that's a little bit different than when we talk generally about EMF. And EMF stands for electromagnetic fields. When you hear that term, normally what people are referring to is power frequency fields or electricity. And the common sources for people of EMF would be power lines, electrical appliances, home wiring, and so on. And for I think our first discussion today, we're going to be talking about RFR, or radio frequency radiation, and that cell phone use and the exposure that people get from cell towers and cell antennas that help transmit that wireless communication.
Cindy, how is this different from X-ray radiation?
Oh, good point to bring up. The kind of radiation, RFR and EMF, that we're talking about today is non-ionizing, meaning it's not supposed to be able to break chemical bonds, as opposed to ionizing radiation like X-rays, gamma rays, and so on, which have been known for decades to be extremely harmful to cells, to chromosomes, and DNA. And what's very curious about this emerging field of science right now is that non-ionizing radiation, or the kind of radiation we're talking about today, is beginning to appear that to have some of the very same properties adverse to biological systems that we have seen in ionizing radiation. It's not simply there's not a distinction as much anymore, and this can lead potentially to some very serious health consequences that we don't yet fully understand.
Okay, well let's get into that. But one of the things we should explain is that there have been some studies done on the health effects of radio frequency radiation from cell phones.
That's
and true. We should explain how these have been conducted, because most of what you sent me, and you sent me a load of stuff to look at, it's very compelling, is done on rats or in vitro. So the question that begs asking here is, Why should this be significant? We've seen the scientific community do studies on materials where they give rats exposures to things. These are also rats that are prone to get cancer, and I'm just wondering what's compelling about this research. It always, one looks at this and says, I'm not a petri dish and I'm not a rat. So
right. Well, I think what's probably interesting to point out first is that a number of the things that we refer to are actually studies on humans. And when we talk about some of the studies that relate to slowed motor skills, slowed reaction time, headaches, loss of concentration, increased heart rate, and increased blood pressure, and these are all things that have been measured in humans, all right? We are talking about things that are either measured or reported in human populations from cell phone exposure.
Okay, so what we're talking about now is there's a lot of research on the effects on rats and in vitro, in petri dishes. But there is, in fact, also lots of material from Henry Lay, a PhD. You sent me an article he wrote in the Health Reporter from November, December 97 about free radical and oxidative stress from exposure to radio frequency. Radiation, including potential DNA damage, and then additionally, he has a whole paper on the neurological effects. So he's making these conclusions or these hypotheses from human material with humans, but is it anecdotal or were these done as controls?
Well, some of them certainly are done as controls, and I think to Henry Lai's work is certainly significant in this area, but a number of his papers are based on either rat brain cells or whole animal studies, and some are based on humans, not necessarily Henry's, but some of the others I referred to. So you really have a mix, and I think probably at the outset it's important to say that we don't yet have the final word on all of the effects that may be possible with either short-term exposure or chronic long-term exposure. But we do have evidence from cell cultures. We do have evidence from whole animal studies, including a very famous recent study conducted by Rapaccioli that showed if you exposed rats to only a couple of half-hour periods of cell phone frequency during a day's time, they double their risk, or there's a significant increase in risk of lymphoma, which is a type of cancer. And of course, whole animal studies have really been a gold standard for determining whether or not we're looking at carcinogens in other instances with chemical carcinogens.
Right.
So, the question is, how much of this can we pull and abstract out from the animal kingdom in testing and apply to humans? I think that's always a good question to ask, but it is the way in which many researchers are funded to evaluate potential carcinogens.
Now, in addition to that, I noticed your writing in the margin in one of these areas where you wrote DNA is DNA, which is a good point. What you were pointing out is that damage to DNA is significant. The fact that it's a rat versus a human, or that it's in vitro, is still worth noting. And in addition to that, one of the things that seems to be compelling about all the research is the emphasis on low intensity but cumulative effect, which is what we see in practical situations where people are beginning to use cellular cordless phones, instead of regular phones. In fact, people often use the cellular phones when they're out and about, but they've started to just sort of use them all the time. So people are using them for hours at a time. There was the study from The Lancet, published in The Lancet in June 20th, 98, about the sympathetic activity being stimulated by 35 minutes on a cellular phone and the blood pressure going up and vasoconstriction. We don't need new sources of stress, and
right.
This seems to indicate that that there's a stress response.
Well, this is a very good way to think about radio frequency radiation. If you understand that when anyone is impacted by ionizing radiation or chemical assault with a chemical that's not good for the body, or with anoxia, which is lack of oxygen, or even psychological stress, those things all trigger the creation of stress hormones in the body, and that is a measure of stress, of the body saying this is something that is not good for me. Non-ionizing radiation, which is what we're talking about, has identical effect on the body. And here what we're seeing is that you get exactly the same level of impact on the body with non-ionizing radiation as you do with ionizing radiation in the creation of these stress proteins and hormones. And so what it's telling us is that we should be looking at these chronic long-term exposures, because the ultimate consequence of this cascade of events is aging, it's oxidative stress, it's the creation of free radicals, and ultimately it can be cell death. And this is the, quote, plausible biological mechanism that people may be looking for in terms of defining how it is that DNA can be affected by what heretofore has been thought of as very low-level radiation,
mm-hmm.
too low to harm or too low to hurt.
Right.
So this is the area where the research really needs to go and look.
All right, well, let's just... As we're talking here about telephones, let's differentiate now between cordless phones, which everybody's using now, and cell phones.
Okay.
In terms of potential cumulative danger.
Well, you know, it's tough at this point, I think, to talk about cumulative danger. I think I might phrase it differently, but
okay. How would you phrase it?
What I could tell you is that in order of preference, if you want to avoid RFR, radio frequency radiation, first, in preference, use a landline, you know, use your normal telephone. Next, you would choose to use a cordless phone.
Now, cordless phones now are available with headsets. So if you, I noticed from what you sent me that the tricky part here is this is true with cell phones, too, that a headset may be better, but you want to be careful where you position
well,
the
yeah,
phone.
You're shifting the radio frequency effect around to a different part of the body if you wear the phone, but... First,
well, what if you don't wear the phone? What if you've got the headset on and the phone is sitting across from you?
That certainly reduces the amount
mm-hmm.
of field, although there are some reports that the field actually can in some part slide back up the cording. But, you know, this is a report I've seen and I haven't been able to verify. But generally, a headset would remove you from the brunt of the radio frequency energy you'd otherwise get.
And this is true with cellular phones as well?
Right. Yeah, if you're going I have a number of things that I recommend to people to do to be safer in using a cell phone. One of them, although it's not perfect, is to use either an earpiece or a headset.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other things to consider as well in doing that.
Okay, well, we can go back to what your recommendations are for cell phone use. Let's go ahead and keep comparing the cordless and the cell
right.
phone for a second.
Well, you know, the other day we had the opportunity in our office to measure the radio frequency energy output from a cell phone. And what we found is that the person using the phone at their head was getting about 150 microwatts per centimeter squared. Just that's the unit of measurement that we used to measure this. For reference, this woman who was using a cell phone as our test object was pregnant. It was her phone. And at fetus level, the measured field of power was about 50 microwatts per centimeter squared. So 150 at the head, 50 at the abdomen. And I had to walk away with the meter almost 4 feet before I was back down to ambient levels or something around under 1 microwatt. So there is a fairly, you know, strong field or amount of power coming from these in comparison to a cordless phone, which has about 10 microwatts per centimeter squared at the head. At least these are the generally the numbers we get when we test.
But you're saying, again, remember, well, quickly, let me just ID the show in case people are just dialing by. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with environmental consultant Cindy Sage, and we're talking about potential hazards of radio frequency radiation from, at this point, cellular phones, although we'll talk about others. So early on, when X-ray radiation first came out, everybody thought this was so magical. They were X-raying your feet just to find out what size shoe you needed. So there was rampant use of very high dosages of this. And what's happening now is that we're in the infancy of this radiation form, too. So what we're, I think, appealing to people is to be prudent or cautious, because we don't know yet. And prudence or caution, from your standpoint, is to keep your exposure down to one?
No, I would say I think there's no reasonable way for people to know when they're at 1 or 5
okay.
or 10. You know,
okay.
They don't carry radio frequency meters around. But here's what you could think about. You know, if you're thinking about giving your child one of these new kiddie phones for Christmas, a cell phone with 3 buttons, one for mommy, one for daddy, and one for preschool, don't do that yet. Children may be more susceptible to the effect of radio frequency radiation, just as they seem to be for EMF or 60 hertz power field. So we don't want to use these kids as test subjects. And if the American buying public today thinks that they're being protected by any of the U.S. federal agencies, I think what they should know is that the policy today is post-sale surveillance. And that policy, if you dissect it, means that you buy them, you use them, we wait and see what the human impact is, we look epidemiologically across people in about 4 or 5 years, and then we'll decide if there's a problem. Frankly, I don't think that policy is prudent, and I certainly don't think it's prudent for children. So, you know, the caution here then would be, okay, if you need a cell phone for a child going off to college, so when they drive back and forth they have a, you know, a little insurance policy if they get a flat tire, that's a good use of a cell phone. It's not a good use of a cell phone to give one to a 4 or 5 year old as a trinket toy until we know more about the effect.
Well, let's go on from there. What are other good uses or some suggestions that you have for people if they say want to use, let's say that somebody really feels that they need it for their line of work.
Sure.
What recommendations do
yeah.
you have?
And you know, some people are required to use them for their work, which really creates a dilemma for them. I've got to tell you, one day I was flying out of Burbank Airport up to Las Vegas on business, and it coincidentally there was a large telecom convention there. And most of the people in the waiting area were going to this telecom conference, and they all had their cell phones. But the funniest thing was that they were all using them in strange ways. These were providers, these were people who were employed by carriers and so on. And they were talking with these things held out way away from their head. They had headsets. They were doing bizarre things to distance their heads from the phone, and I think that was very telling. These
mm-hmm.
people are required to have them, and yet there is some concern. Here are some sort of simple suggestions about how to think about using a phone in a safer way, though. If you need to use one, you know, if you have to use one for now, these are the things you can do. If you have to make a particularly long call and it's at all possible, use a landline. If that is impossible, try to limit the duration of your calls to a minute or so, because biological effects are shown to start within the very first minutes of use. Next, think about shifting that phone from one side of your head to the other, or moving it around so it's not always aligning the antenna in the same place on your skull. Some of the anecdotal evidence, and again, it's anecdotal only, but it indicates that for those people who have brain tumors and who claim that they may be related to long-term cell phone use, there are reports of these tumors in the brain aligning precisely along the axis of the antenna on the side of the head used to hold a cell phone. So, you know, vary the place that you put it at your head, and it's always a good idea to keep that antenna sort of pulled out as far away from the skull as you can. Don't crunch it to your head. Don't let that antenna touch your head. Okay? Some other just sort of common sense things, call from quiet places. Again, you're going to avoid the need to put that phone so close to your head that you're going to be in close proximity to that antenna. And even a few inches makes a very big difference. If you're out and about and you can get a built-in model in your car, this is really preferable, because think about this. the antenna, which is producing the power, is on the back windshield. It's outside, and so it's at, what, five or six feet or more from you in the front seat. However, if you do that, just remember the antenna is going to be closer to anyone sitting in the back seat, and that may include your children. In terms of what phone to buy, the smaller versions typically have higher output, and so you may want to keep your older, clunkier, larger model for a little while longer.
Yes, that's going to be sad for a lot of people because there's this whole sort of competitive who has the smallest phone thing.
Well, who has the biggest brain tumor?
Yeah, right, who has the smallest phone and the largest brain tumor?
Here's a trade-off. I think that if efficiency is what you're after, a phone that's a little bit larger perhaps with a little bit smaller power output is wise. And shop around. You know, you should be asking what the power output is of the cell phone that you want to buy for Christmas and keep it as low as you can. Okay, here's the really important part of this, I think, when people are out thinking about new models. Keep your analog phone if you can. Do not switch to digital. And I realize that this appears to be the way that the industry is moving. But what you must understand about digital phones is that they're much different in operation than analog phones. And the biological consequences are likely to be much greater with digital phones. And I can explain that if you want to go into the details.
Well, let's get through this first because I'm afraid we're going to run out of time.
Yeah. Well, those are the most important things to be considering. And if you're going to use a digital phone, what you should know is that digital phones produce their information in pulses that are what we call ELF modulated, meaning they have not only radio frequency as an output to your head, but they have ELF or power frequency output. It's a function of the way that they work. It is like, well, the most recent report I've seen is one from Sweden, which tested digital phones and found that 50 times a second they were putting out 18 to 52 milligauss mm-hmm. in bursts. This is the ELF or power frequency component. For a lot of people that we help when we, you know, survey homes and try to reduce their electromagnetic fields in their homes, we try to target under 1 milligauss as a good level to live. And these telephones are putting out 18 to 52 milligauss, 50 times a second, at the head. You would literally have to go to the electrical subpanel in your home, put your head against it to have that kind of an exposure. This would be completely unacceptable to most people who have any educated background in this area. So that digital phone may be giving you more than you understand. We need more research on this. We need more work on this. We need to understand the biological effects. But for now, I think we can say we know enough to be prudent and avoid those things which are dramatically more bioactive.
Now, one of the things that's interesting here is there have been, as you and I discussed, many people talking about the dangers of cellular phones from the standpoint of people being distracted. But an additional piece of information is that there are brain symptoms, cognitive symptoms associated with exposure to mobile phone use of a mobile phone, memory loss, slowed motor skills, spatial disorientation, fuzzy thinking. Here we have people who are driving on the road and are having this thing. You've compared it to people driving under the influence of alcohol.
Well, you know, the numbers aren't mine. I mean, recent publications in peer-reviewed journals show that people who drive and use cell phones have 400 times the accident rate, and I would think it's both a combination of distraction and the physical and biological impacts of using a cell phone.
All right. What we've done is we've done a pretty good job of explaining what the concerns are with cell phone use. There's an additional situation here, which is that we have towers in the environment for these cell phones. And then we also have this situation now where we have competing and mixing types of radiation frequencies all get, you know. And the interesting thing is that because we truly don't know, there's even been a little bit of research that indicates that maybe very low electromagnetic fields may be, in the end, may be a good treatment for cancer. So there's all this kind of stuff that we don't know. I mean, health systems like Chinese medicine have been working with electromagnetic fields in our bodies for centuries. So there's this other issue, which is things like you mentioned having children in the home, someone's using a cell phone, what's the exposure to the child. the difference between exposing a child versus an adult, and the fact that we have, as we work our way out to talking about electromagnetic fields in general, all this competing radiation.
Right.
What do we know about that?
Well, cumulatively, we don't know enough. In the last couple of hundred years, we have literally created a bath of electromagnetic radiation that we move through now, and there's almost no place on Earth that you can go to avoid it. We don't know the long-term consequences of these things, but what my take on this from a review of a lot of the literature is that it isn't so frequency specific. Whether we're talking about lower or higher frequencies, it does appear that there is great similarity in the kind of biological effects that we see across the electromagnetic spectrum. So we ought to be looking at the sum total of exposure that we have, and I think that's what you're leading to. But it's really tough in this society. If you know anything about some of these cell tower battles where communities have tried to prevent the installation of, cell antenna farms on top of buildings or in schools or in church steeples, this creates a really intolerable situation, because the exposure to neighbors and to school mm-hmm. children is involuntary.
Exactly. And I want you to hold that thought. We need to break for just 30 seconds here. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Cindy Sage, environmental consultant, about electromagnetic fields, radio frequency, radiation, cellular phones, towers, and the environment. We're going to take a 30-second break. This is Lena Berman, your own health and fitness. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Lena Berman, your own health and fitness, doing a show on the potential hazards of radio frequency radiation and electromagnetic radiation with environmental consultant Cindy Sage. And we were just talking about some of the involuntary exposures. Like one person may decide to use a cell phone, but what about people who don't get, decide not to, and there are these towers going up everywhere? One of the things that's a concern is that it nobody's surprised anymore, but the scientific community has a way of sort of burying information. And I noticed that, for instance, Motorola has done studies and then sort of been a little sneaky with the results. Am I right?
Well, Motorola was quite slow to produce some of its study results. But I think overall the industry has really not taken any leadership role in trying to get a good research program going.
Well, it's hard to imagine why they would do that.
Well, there's one in name, the Wireless Technology Research Program, but it's been going 5 years and has hardly wet a test tube. These things need to be funded and go forward. But in the meantime, the infrastructure is being developed all over the country. Literally hundreds of thousands of towers go up in neighborhoods. And they're basically the Telecommunications Act of 1996 at the federal level preempted any local consideration of radio frequency health effects. We can argue at our local zoning board or planning commission about aesthetics. We are not even allowed to bring up radio frequency effects.
How can somebody find out whether they're even near something? How do you find out whether something's near you?
Well, that's very difficult. In some counties, there has been a little bit more leadership shown where counties will require certain basic information be put on file, and the county can then create a map showing the locations of these transmitters. But by and large, the industry has used a very heavy hand to come in and threaten lawsuits for anyone who even raises the issue or asks for information, so local people can know where these things go, and that is not a good situation. One of the interesting things, Lena, that we're finding is in some of the studies, particularly from Europe now, where the funding situation is better, is that some of these cell phone antennas produce effects biologically at very great distance and at very, very vanishingly small levels of power. And this is of great concern because we are the experiment.
Well, and I know you just gave a talk to a breast cancer group, so there's some real concern here.
Well, certainly, women with breast cancer concerns should be minimizing their exposure to EMF and RF as they can, particularly if they're in a recovery mode. One of the things that we do here is to provide small meters that can be worn for a couple of days or a week, and they will record your 24-hour exposure to EMF, to 60 hertz power fields, and we can print it out and see where you've been and what you were doing.
Let's shift over now, because I want to make sure that we cover both. The other thing to consider, whether you use a cordless cellular, whatever you're doing, is just what you're being exposed to in the environment and what you can do to take care. I mean, there are certain things, if you have, for instance, PG&E, which would be our local carrier, out to mm-hmm. check the levels of electromagnetic fields in your house.
Right.
There are things you can do, like not sleep in the bed next to the thing where your box is on the outside of the wall. But there are appliances that we have that are very high output, like refrigerators are really high.
Well, you know, here the point is know what your exposure is, get it measured, and then determine whether you're actually spending a lot of time, you know, where you have occupied space with fields that are over 1 or maybe 2 milligauss. This is a pretty routine thing for people to do now if they choose to do it. And it's pretty clear from the study results that exposure long-term to more than a couple of milligauss is a carcinogen. In fact, only this summer the World Health Organization IARC standards were used in this country to classify EMF as a Category 2B carcinogen or possible carcinogen. For childhood leukemia and adult
They've just kind of raised it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not so long ago, they were saying just don't sleep under an electric blanket because that's 8 hours of exposure,
right.
Or use the electric heating pad, hours and hours of very high exposure. And here also, we're talking about a term that they use, thermal versus non-thermal too.
Let's leave that for a discussion of radio frequency.
Oh, okay.
It's better there than when we talk about, you know, power line fields and so on. But I think it is really important for people to know that despite all the headlines they've been seeing over the last years that say there's, you know, the all clear is sounded, there's no problem with power lines, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences expert panel voted to classify EMF as a Category 2B carcinogen this summer, and that is the same category that holds DDT and lead.
Mm.
If you care about DDT and lead, they are in the same category, limited 2B possible carcinogen. And DDT and lead are on the U.S. Agency for Toxic Substances, 20 most hazardous substances known. So EMF has moved into the arena of being considered a possible carcinogen, and now we're just trying to figure out how big the risk will be.
Okay, so now that we've made people a bit nervous, let's talk about what sorts of actions they can actually take. Because essentially, there are some things you can't control. Somebody buys a house, there's a low-level power pole in front of their house, but what you can do is then begin to balance what's in the house and look at what you're using. In other words, you can do things to lower your exposure in the home.
Oh, absolutely. And by and large, Lena, it's important for people to know most homes that have high EMF levels probably don't get that from power lines. They get it because the interior wiring in their house is not done properly. They're probably code violations, and those are eminently fixable. So the good news is that if you have some high fields and you don't have an obvious power line exposure, it's probably just electrical and it can be fixed.
Let's go over a few other things that may be an issue. Everybody's using halogen lamps. Everyone's using fluorescent lamps. These are all energy-saving lights. Maybe not so great, huh?
Well, halogen lights have been, in at least one study, implicated in the production of skin cancer in mice. But they do also produce a fairly high level of electromagnetic field up close to them. You can use those at distance, perhaps, but good old incandescent lighting is absolutely the best. And low-voltage lighting, which a lot of people like for effect, actually creates some very high-field hot spots.
You're talking about if you have a dimmer. You're not talking about using a low-voltage bulb.
No, I'm talking about the low-voltage bulb because there's a transformer that's built into the can that you put in the ceiling, and that transformer is just like the one that you use for, you know, recharging lots of little things.
No, but I'm saying that if you have a lamp and you put a 40-watt bulb in there to get a low light, a regular bulb.
Oh, we're talking
you're talking about fluorescents and dimmers and things like
right.
that.
We're talking two kinds of low voltage. Incandescent lighting can be anything from a 40-watt light bulb on up to the big ones, but low voltage technically means that the voltage is about 12 volt. It goes down through a little black box that reduces the voltage on it, and that produces very high fields. So use those with care when you talk to your architect or your designer, ask for incandescent, not low voltage, and not fluorescent.
What about people who are using light boxes for seasonal affect disorder?
Well, you know, as long as you're 2 to 3 feet away from those, the EMF component is going to be low.
Okay.
And the benefits are great. I mean, that's a great use of light.
No, it works for some people. It's very important. Blocking exposure from the little black power boxes that we plug in for our phones and computer equipment. You're sitting there at your computer, and you've got these little black boxes at your knees.
Yeah, well, those little black boxes produce 300 to 400 milligauss, and you have to move 2 or 3 feet away to get out of their field. So.
Can you shield them?
You probably could, but it's a whole lot easier to just move them.
It's not so easy to move because your cords, you know, have a limited length to them.
Well, they can be shielded with something called mu metal, which we use to install in small areas.
Mu?
Mu, yeah, the Greek letter, mu or mu metal. And that's a very effective blocking material. It's like thick tin foil, but it takes a little bit of doing. We have, as I think about it, we have not had a situation where we couldn't find a way to remote little transformers like that, and it's cheaper and simpler to do it that way.
Well, and also, what we're you're probably going to want to give out your number, although you're not going to be able to service everybody that's listening to you right now. So, where should people? First of all, why don't you go ahead and give out your office number if people want to contact you, and tell them what they can contact you for?
Sure, our phone number in Santa Barbara is 805-969-0557.
Do that again.
805-969-0557.
And what are you prepared to help people with?
Well, I'd say first go to our website and read the kind of work we do.
And that is?
Lots of tips. www.silcom, and that's spelled S-I-L-C-O-M, as in Mary, .com/tilde.
Oh, okay. We should explain. You mean a straight slash, a little dash kind of slash, and then one of those tildes?
No, I mean silcom.com/.
Forward slash, okay.
There we go. Tilde, and that's a little wavy sign that you get by hitting a shift.
Okay.
And then SAGE, S-A-G-E, / EMF.
Congratulations on having a more complicated URL than mine. I did put this on my website, and I'll have to double-check to make sure I've got a forward slash instead of a slash. Anyway, okay, www, and then it's dot, S-I-L-C-O-M dot com, / wiggly line tilde, S-A-G-E, / E-M-F. At the end of the show, I will run to the front desk of KPFA and leave it there, but I will also repair this if it's mistaken on my
Perfect.
Own website.
And I think, Lena, what we're going to do, too, is to put on an outline of the things that we've covered today, including some of the cell phone shielding or earphone or microchip opportunities that there are to either reduce or eliminate some of the problems with these cell phones.
So you're saying you're going to make some of this available on your website?
I think that's a good way to do
it. Okay. Now, if people don't have a computer, where can they go for this type of information?
I think the best thing to do would be to telephone us, and we can refer them on to the company or the product that we've tried and we can recommend. And that would go for cell phone things, and it would also go for Gauss meters if people are still looking to purchase a Gauss meter
for
home use. Yeah.
I would just like to, before I open up the phone lines, remind people to please take your antioxidant vitamins. The simplest ones are A, E, and C. Take C with bioflavonoids. But a good multivitamin at the very least, because what we are talking about is partially free radical damage, oxidative damage, which is you protect yourself from that with good antioxidant vitamins, and then obviously don't put your head in the microwave, things like that. So I know you're anxious to ask Cindy questions. This is your own health and fitness. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman with Cindy Sage, environmental consultant. We're opening up the phone lines now, in or out of the area code, at 510-848-4425. Again, 510-848-4425. Please remember to turn your radio down before we pick up your line. Who do I have here? First, Robert in Concord.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thanks for the show. Question here, where I work, we use a brand name, Nextel, that you may have heard about.
Right. They're a carrier.
Yeah. I've been concerned about the frequency blast that I've noticed from at least two rooms away. It'll interrupt my radio when I'm listening to Lena Berman. And he likes
Art.
It also will interrupt a regular tape recorder that I have that only plays cassette tapes.
You know, that brings up an interesting question, Cindy, which is that if you're getting buzzing on your cell, and, you know, if you're getting interference from various sources, you can sort of use that as a way of sensing that something might be up, huh?
You certainly can. And electromagnetic interference is a huge problem. It's easy when we can see it. Our laptop isn't working properly because we have our cell phone going at the same time right near it. But obviously, you know, we're concerned about the effect on the body as well. I would think in this situation that if I understand it correctly, you might want to have someone come and measure for radio frequency where you are working, because it sounds as if there is a significant power there that has the power to impede. It may be ELF or electromagnetic fields at 60 hertz, or it may be radio frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And who does he contact for that?
First of all, you can contact PG&E up in your area if you want to have a 60 hertz power check run on it with a Gauss meter to rule that out. And if that is not what this is, Nextel should have a meter, and if you contact them and ask for one of their engineers to assist you, they should bring that meter out and test. We've done that here at our office, and they've complied.
And will they give me information on what is good and what isn't good as far as amounts?
Well, you know, probably, Robert, they're going to tell you that the FCC standard is 1,000 microwatts per centimeter squared, and you've only got 50, and that isn't particularly helpful if it's creating a problem for you. So they probably won't tell you much about safe or not safe, but they should give you the levels.
Okay.
And then it's up to you to go find out what they mean.
Great. All right,
thanks,
thank
Robert.
You.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mary in Oakland.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I work in the I work very close to BART train. Okay. They're run on electricity.
Right.
And I really don't know the voltage that they advertise on the gap breaker stations, but I'm sure that it's high. I want to know, is there any kind of way for me to protect myself in that environment?
This is a place that, how far in feet is this away from actually from the track that you work?
It varies. It varies from station to station.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what we know from some of the European studies is that railway workers have increased incidence of some kinds of cancers because they have quite high levels of exposure. Again, the first thing I'd recommend to anybody asking the question is, Get this characterized. Borrow or ask someone to come out from the power company and actually measure the electromagnetic field levels that you experience. Alternately, have them give you a meter you can wear for a few days.
Ooh.
And record your fields. And then you'll know precisely what you're getting at work, and you'll also know at home and on the way home.
I can get a meter from the power people to use?
Yes. The meter you want is called an MDEX light, E-M-D-E-X, and then light. And those are handy little recording computers that will do the trick.
Okay, so this is again called, this is a Gauss meter that's called an E-M-D-E-X light, L-I-G-H-T.
Right.
MDEX light Gauss meter. And
G-O-U-S-E, excuse me.
G-A-U-S-S.
Uh-huh.
Gauss meter. Okay.
Yeah, we rent them out here, but I think you'll probably be able to get one for free if you try that first.
Wonderful. I thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mary. Let's move on to David in Novato.
Hello.
Go ahead, David.
Hi, this is David Dierman with Safe Environment.
Hi, David.
How are you? Hi, Cindy. How you been?
Hi, how are you?
We're both in a similar field.
Yeah, no, David's been on the show a long time ago, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
David and I are colleagues.
I'd like to just mention that, I don't know if it was brought up, but Ellen Sugarman's book on electromagnetic fields.
Oh, good idea. What's it called?
Electromagnetic fields may be hazardous to your health. She wrote that a while back, but it's been updated recently, and it's a new copy out.
Right. Ellen's book is really excellent. I would recommend it to your listeners, and also Blake Levitt's book just called Electromagnetic Fields. Both are excellent.
And also a point of reference with regards to the digital phones. You said that there's a bit of EMF coming out with regards to low milligauss, was it?
Right.
18 milligauss. That's a point source, right?
Well, that's the battery pack pulsing, and it's modulated ELF.
Uh-huh. So it would diminish as a fairly quickly if you place it fairly far away from it.
Well, we don't get that from the research papers, but you can sure measure it. I mean, we've measured in our office, and out you have to be probably 3 to 4 feet away before you're out of the field.
Okay.
And again, your meter is going to time average, so it's going to appear lower on the meter.
And another point that I wanted to bring up was is that very few people do long-term analysis with spiking of EMF fields. We don't really know much about that, but you know, doing an ordinary point source analysis, say that PG&E would walk into your home and give you some information at the time, does not necessarily give you a real clear range of what the high point, high peak levels would be versus, say, the low peak level, especially if you were, like, with regards to a power line issue. I get calls all the time where people want to buy a house near a transmission line, and they want to know, you know, can you come in and just measure it? And there's a lot of variance in the actual field strength that would be created, so that I usually recommend long-term analysis.
Right, yeah, good point.
Okay, David, thanks for sharing that
You're
with
welcome.
Us. Appreciate your calling in. You know, another thing I might mention is that people who are sensitive will notice if they're reacting. You know, I think I've noticed that if I spend too much time on a cordless phone, I feel fatigued, more so than on a corded phone. So I think that certainly people who are sensitive, particularly people with chemical sensitivities and environmental illness, get slurred speech and things sometimes under power lines. So sometimes you can just pay attention to where you're getting, how, not that this is the ultimate way to figure this out, but if you're worried and you wonder, not to sort of put an idea in people's heads, but you can sort of pay attention to how you're feeling during the day, too, and then that might be an inspiration to go on and check. Susan in San Francisco.
Hi. My mother has a large microwave oven in her kitchen. It's large enough to roast turkeys in and stuff. And I've been reading about the links between that and, you know, microwaves, EMFs, and childhood leukemias. And I'm wondering, when my 7-year-old nephew is over there, he'll be in the kitchen in the same room when she'll use it to zap his macaroni and cheese and stuff. And I'm wondering if there's a safe distance, or if he should even be in the room at all when this is being used.
Right. We've measured these in lots of different situations. And normally, if you're 5 to 7 feet away from a microwave oven that's in use, you're out of the elevated field. So if the kitchen is big enough, he should be sitting at least on the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a small kitchen, he may have to bail out entirely. The thing you want to avoid is having him put his little nose up to the window and watch it bubble.
Okay, we'll avoid that at all costs.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's move on to Libby in Novato. Libby in Novato.
Hi, good afternoon. I want to thank you, Cindy, for your clear explanation of what people can do to protect themselves personally in relationship to these fields around them. I'd also like to mention some work that I'm doing and tell people what citizens could do. I'm part of a national network called the EMR Network, and we are organized to raise public awareness about the increase in electrification in this country and the use of wireless in this country, both of which are on the increase. And the effects it may have on our health. We're also challenging the federal government, the FCC, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for setting such a high threshold of what is considered safe. We believe there are low-intensity exposures that can be harmful to human health, and we would like the FCC to take those factors into account. And I just wanted to mention that if anyone is interested in information from our organization, I'd like to give my phone number, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
It's 415-892-1863.
Okay.
And I can tell you, Libby's work with EMR Network is an excellent organization for getting information out to the public about cell phone antennas and how to deal with the issue on a community basis.
Okay. Libby, you still there?
We're concerned about.
Yeah. Libby, give your number one more time.
415-892-1863.
And that's again called?
The EMR Network.
EMR.
EMR, Electromagnetic Radiation Network. We're a group of citizens and professionals who are working nationally to help people understand and deal as citizens with these issues in
okay.
their own communities.
Thank you for your call. John in San Rafael.
Hi.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I'm pretty good. Let's see, hopefully I won't be coming out of left field here. I just got a call from my wife, and she's been listening to your program, and said that there was a comment made earlier about compact fluorescent light bulbs?
Well, it's just this concern about sometimes the energy-saving bulbs. You have a comment, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, it mainly has to do with, you know, the fact that, you know, she told me that you had, you know,
Just tell us what you, why don't you just share with us what information you have, because we're running out of time.
Well, it's just mainly that incandescent bulbs are, you know, use that 4 times the amount of energy that a compact fluorescent bulb uses, and so the use of compact fluorescence will, you know, conserve and keep a tremendous amount of pollution out of the air and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So
thank you.
It's a great point. We just have this dilemma. You know, we want to save energy, but at the same time, we don't want to expose people to something that may be harmful, and we've got to find a balance.
Yeah, I agree. Gene in Berkeley.
Okay, let me turn off this first of all.
Very quickly, Gene, because
okay.
We're running out of time here.
What it is this. I belong to a church. We're planning to have a system to transmit our programs within our church with a transmitter, radio transmitter, and each person would, say, have people that are hard of hearing would have a radio with
headphone, huh?
Earphones.
Yeah.
And of course, we're transmitting it by radio waves.
Yeah, so you're wondering if that's dangerous, huh?
Pardon me?
You're just wondering if that's dangerous?
Yes.
What do you think, Cindy?
Well, you know, this is something I would really have to look at or measure. I don't want to give you an answer and not be sure about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd proceed with a little bit of caution.
You know, they have these also, you know, hearing assistant systems that use the same type of thing with a transmitter and earphones, you know, the same kind of a thing transmitting on FM.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a little bit like listening to a radio. Cindy, are you saying that listening to a radio is dangerous?
No, not at all, but
okay.
I'm wondering where the transmitter is, if it's built into the headsets or if there's...
No, there's a separate transmitter, we'll say, in the front of the room, and it's transmitting this to each person that has the radio then.
Yeah, my engineer, who is our operations manager, just whispered into my microphone that it sounds like it's pretty low level. It probably isn't too bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, thank you for your call, Gene. Let's move on to Ed in Berkeley. We've got just about 30 seconds.
Hi, I'm concerned about the kookification of people. I'm a physicist, and I'm the jury is still out as far as I'm concerned. I think that we should really be checking this out and not doing guinea pig tests on the human population. And I was wondering, I ran into a woman who was worried about the KPFA microwave antenna in the Xerox shop. She was Xeroxing her stuff, and I'm wondering whatever happened about that. That was about 3 or 4 years ago. She had an apartment right next door to KPFA, and she was concerned, and KPFA was sort of, actually KPFA's legal staff was sort of kookifying her. I know it's a hard thing, but we have to.
You know what? I'm going to let Jim. Can you answer him directly? Yeah, let's have Jim answer you.
Sure. This is Jim Bennett, the engineer here. KPFA actually, when they moved into this building, adopted through the efforts of the city of Berkeley what's called the Russian standard, which is much more stringent than the American standard in terms of radiating frequency or power. So basically, there's no danger even within KPFA of what's happening, and certainly not to the neighborhood at all. And we actually have papers on file that show what we did, and it's available to anyone that
great.
Wants it.
Great. You know what? I'm sorry, Ed. We're completely out of time. Thank you. Thanks, Jim. Cindy, what a great guest you are. Thank you so much for taking the time to do the show and all of your preparation that you did and all the stuff you sent me. Again, your phone number is?
Area code 805-969-0557.
One more time.
969-0557. And that's area 805.
Thank you very much for taking the time with us.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks all of you who called in and participated in today's show. If you missed part of today's show and you want to get a cassette copy of it, or if you need more information about the show, you can call the information number 24 hours a day at 707-773-4727. Again, 707-773-4727. For a list of other available shows, send a self-addressed stamped business-sized envelope with 2 stamps to P.O. Box 2714, Petaluma 94953. The internet address for the show, is delete www and type in members.aol.com/ YOHAF, Your Own Health and Fitness. Next week, I'll be interviewing cell biologist and professor of biology, Ursula Goodenough, who has written a new book that celebrates molecular biology and the spiritual and religious meaning that can be found at the heart of science. I'm Lena Berman. This has been Your Own Health and Fitness Talk Show on KPFA and KPFK. See you next week.